following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Rad Rob Radio Network. Through the years, we all remember when we first witnessed a national tragedy.
Alabama wins!
We remember the good times and the bad times through either a song, a TV show, a monumental sports achievement.
For the first time in 86 years, the Red Sox have won baseball's world championship. Can you believe it?
Or even the smell of a particular food from when we were young.
To all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun.
Welcome to the show that will take you on a journey through time to relive those iconic moments. Welcome to RTW Rewind, where old school rules. So, without any further delay, let's introduce you to the host of the show, Rad Rob Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. This is the third annual Royal Rumble week. This is day six. God damn, I'm tired. We have a special guest today from ProWrestling.net. The nicest guy in the wrestling business. Well, it depends who you ask, I guess. He's been on the show several times. I've known him for a few years now. It is my friend Jason Powell. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, good to talk to you. And yes, it definitely depends who you ask.
Yeah, that's for sure. I will say this. You're the most accurate person in the sheets, if you want to call it. I mean, you're not really a sheet, but you actually, promote real news. How have you stayed under the radar all these years?
I think by cutting back on just how much news I attempt to break, right. That lets you kind of fade to the background, which isn't great, the greatest business move, but it's also better for your sanity.
No, it is. And you guys do a lot of review shows and you guys have several podcasts. So I've always enjoyed your content. Wade's too. Wade has a lot of podcasts. But I guess you really only report on the big things, but you don't try to ruin your reputation by throwing shit against the wall and see if it sticks. So you've always kind of been able to avoid that.
Yeah, that stuff's just not worth it. I mean, it's especially in this social media age where you throw something out there that's inaccurate, and within sometimes seconds, maybe minutes, there's the person you're reporting on that you're putting out false information, but they're going to be all over you, So I don't understand why some people do it. It's never been my thing, even pre-social media. But yeah, it's just, I guess in some cases they just look for attention. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, We've talked about Dave Meltzer before, but I mean, it looks like, I don't want to name names, but there's certain people that reported that Vince McMahon's house is being sold and, they posted a retraction because it wasn't true. But, it's always important to vet your sources and vet your info before you just throw something up on a weekend. So I don't know why they do that. Is it just lazy reporting or copy and paste? I don't know. What do you think is the reason behind it?
I think it varies from person to person. I think in some cases, no one's going to have sympathy for us, but I think people also don't stop and think that, hey, these people have lives. And sometimes you can make a simple mistake. You mentioned a weekend. And so that just pops into my head. Hey, it's a rare weekend when there's nothing going on. I want to get in and get out when it comes to work as much as possible, just to have some semblance of a life outside of wrestling now that it's on, five nights a week, which just makes for ridiculously long work hours. And so, the weekend rolls around, you get something, looks good, and you make them, you're just trying to rush it. And so you can move on to other things. You screw up. That happens. And I think the key is when it does, I mean, it shouldn't happen. But realistically, we've all made mistakes. And yeah, as long as you do run the retraction, so be it. And as long as you learn from that mistake, it's not the end of the world.
True.
It's the repeat offenders that kind of like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's true. So what have you been up to lately? It's been a while since we talked. You're still quite busy with .net.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I'm busy with. It's very time consuming again with every promotion running every night of the week. It seems like, there's at least a wrestling show on every night of the week. Some nights there's multiple shows on. And, when I started this, I remember feeling stressed from covering Raw, SmackDown, Impact, and I guess probably Ring of Honor in some form too. And yeah, there's some indies out there, but it was nothing like it is right now. It's just this explosion of all these different companies. I mean, I'm feeling guilty. There's things that, like the NWA, for instance, I used to cover Power, and I've just had to say, you know, I can't do it. You have to kind of find that balance of interest level. And it's like, if I feel bad because I know that if I cover something, not that I'm the be all and end all, but I'm adding to their exposure, any company, you know, it helps them, but there's just only so much time in a day, and you just really do have to kind of pick your spots. And so that's one of the things that has just fallen by the wayside for now. I mean, I'm not saying I'll never go back to it, but yeah, I mean, run through that schedule. It's just insane how much wrestling content is available now.
Yeah, and that's why I always try not to bother you. I like to keep in touch with you every few months and, you know, get you on for special occasions. But I know you're a busy, busy guy, so, and I know your schedule's fucked up, and you can only do stuff during the day typically. But, you know, I always like to get your opinion on things. And we'll get to the Rumble here in a second. But as far as your content goes, what have you found is the most popular with your podcast or .net? Is it AEW? Is it New Japan? I can't imagine it's WWE right now, but what do people like to hear from you most about?
You know, it really is, though. It is the mainstream. It's WWE, okay. AEW. I don't do a ton of New Japan coverage. I started getting into it, and then it is a combo of, you know, the workload with the North American promotions, but also just interest is clearly down.
Yeah.
You know, with the pandemic and them having to take a different approach to things. And so I do hope to get back into that. I really did enjoy covering the G1. But, you know, that's more of a labor of love. I think there is an audience for it. It's a smaller audience, and I didn't dive in early. And so I think a lot of the people who I would consider to be diehard New Japan followers, they've already decided where they're going. Right. You know, they may check out some other sites, but I'm not going to be high on their list of sites to go to. And so I just kind of take that into consideration. But yeah, I mean, and way too much football. You know, I mean, I think my gal's ready to kick my ass any day now. I'm waiting for that meltdown. It usually happens just before the end of the football season when she's put up with it all year long. And usually, even though, like, there's light at the end of the tunnel now, there's no more Saturday football. I think this Rumble being on Saturday before the conference championship games, that may finally drive her over the edge. She may snap at me this weekend. Like, do we do anything on the weekends anymore?
It's almost over. Yeah, just tell her once the Super Bowl's over in February, you know, you'll be good until baseball starts. So
even then, like, baseball, I can take or leave. Like, if I have it in the background, great. I'm just a Twins guy in a local team. And so, yeah, football's the one where I really dive in. That, and I won't even mention to her the Stanley Cup playoffs when those roll around. I'm pretty much obsessing over those as well.
Right. Do you get into fantasy football at all?
Yes. In fact, I worked at Fanball in between my run at the Torch and .net. Oh, cool. I was a senior, so I can't remember what the hell my title was. Something fancy that sounded important, and I was kind of like a middle-of-the-road guy at Fanball, but it sounded important, whatever the hell that title was. But, believe it or not, Rob, I am an award-winning fantasy football writer. My last year at Fanball before the company was sold to an outfit in St. Louis, I won an award for it, which seemed to be obvious to me, and I couldn't believe how much backlash I got for it. I ranked Randy Moss as the number one wide receiver in football heading into his first year with the Patriots, and he was coming off those two bad years with the Raiders, and so everyone like, oh my God, what are you thinking? Like, I got so much shit just from people that were, you know, fellow staffers that just couldn't believe it. Like, most of them didn't even have him in their top 10, and I'm like, come on. And they're like, well, Brady's, can he throw downfield? That's all Moss can do. He's lost a step. I'm like, Moss didn't lose a step. He's just uninterested playing in Oakland. I think it was Oakland at the time. And, you know, as far as Brady is concerned, he's never had a receiver like Moss. It seemed obvious to me, but I wrote an article, you know, laying out why, and that won me an award. So, yeah, way too much time spent on fantasy football in my life.
That's really cool. I remember that year. We have a 12-team league, and I was last pick. So I had last pick. First round, first pick, second round. So I took Larry Fitzgerald and Randy Moss that year. So I do remember that year.
Championship?
No. Unfortunately, the rest of my team wasn't very good. But
oh, man. It'd be tough that year if you had Moss not to win a championship. God, he was so good.
Somehow I found a way not to. But I actually won this year. So I'm a two-time champion in the league. Been doing the same league for about 15 years. The league I started back when I lived in Connecticut. And my wife actually plays as well. So she didn't make the playoffs this year. But it's funny, the first year that she entered was 2010. And that's the year that I won my first title and she finished second. So we split the money. So we had about $1,500 from
the league. So in other words, she got most of it, even though you claimed you split it?
Yes, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of how it works in my house.
Pretty much. But I got bragging rights because I won this year. So I had a decent team. I had Mahomes. I had Fournette. God, who are my receivers? It's funny. I played all these weeks and I can't remember who the fuck was on my team.
I know that goes.
Oh, I had Mike Evans. I had Antonio Brown for a while, and then obviously he fucked me in the end. Screwed over a lot of people in the end. But, yeah, I had Tampa D. I had, what's his name? The running back for the Packers.
Oh, Aaron Jones,
probably. Aaron Jones, yeah. Which, obviously, he got banged up a little bit along the way. I had a lot of injuries and a lot of COVID shit near the end of the season, but somehow I was able to limp into the playoffs and make it through. But, yeah, I'm sad that it's over. It sucks that the Patriots lost, although I know you don't give a fuck about the Patriots. But I'm still a Tom Brady fan after all these years, so he lost as well. It was a really, really weird weekend. The Titans lost. And then that ridiculous game with why am I so fucking old, dude?
You thinking Bills and Chiefs?
Bills and Chiefs, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. Was that fantastic or what?
It was, unless you're a Bills fan. Then you feel like you got fucked over. But, yeah.
Hey, you know, I can sympathize to a point. I don't feel as bad as maybe I should for the Bills fans. Only because they changed the rule after the Vikings lost to the Saints on a first possession in overtime, and it was a field goal. And if you go back and watched that overtime, really, really questionable pass interference call set them up with that first possession field goal. So after that game, that's when they said, you at least have to score a touchdown in your first possession. So I've been, you know, my team has been fucked worse than the Bills were.
No, that's true. That is very true. What do you think about the fact that it took 12 seconds for Mahomes to get in field goal range? I mean, isn't that a little ridiculous after playing the whole game and all of a sudden their Bills defense, number one defense in the league, just folds that quickly and leaves, Hill and fucking Kelsey wide open?
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, it's, you know, if any team's going to have the firepower to do it, you would think it would be the Chiefs.
Yeah.
The Bills aren't the same without, they're missing their star cornerback, I think, White. He's been out with an ACL, but they still played great football.
They did.
And you would not expect that. And so, yeah, I mean, I did read about, you know, Mahomes, he spoke about that play to Kelsey. Like, it was basically drawn up in the sand kind of a thing because the route called for him to go somewhere else. And he told Mahomes before the play, he kind of figured out where the hole in that defense was going to be. Mm-hmm. And he warned him he may not run that route. And Mahomes told him, as they lined up, he was yelling, do it, because he saw the same thing in the defense.
Wow.
And they just found that right hole, I guess, it probably in a zone defense, and the rest is history.
See, now that's smart shit that I don't even think about. Like, the players on the field reading coverage. I mean, obviously, we know the quarterback does it, but for a tight end to know, hey, man, like, this is what's going to happen. Like, he could just tell by the way they lined up. Like, that's smart football that not many people think about. It really is.
Right. No, I mean, hell, there are some teams that don't even, you know, I mean, imagine it worked out, but think about those control free coaches. If you did that and it didn't work out, oh my God, they'd lose their fucking minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw some weird shit this year, like Baltimore going for two when all they had to do was tie the fucking game and they lose. Like, they've done that a couple years now. I don't understand when you just kind of, the coaches kind of outthink themselves.
Well, how about Staley? I mean, a really good team, and I think he's a good coach, but I don't mind going for it on fourth down a little more often. But to do it like at your, you know, it, whatever it was at the your own teen yard line, like what in the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get that either. It's just weird. The three games were decided, you know, walk off field goals. That's like, when does that ever happen? A lot of people think the league is fixed now. Do you buy into that at all?
No, not at all. I really don't. It just would be so damn hard to fix it.
Yeah.
Could there be referees manipulating in certain situations? It happened in the NBA, so you can't rule out, but as far as like some grand just massive cover up where even if like the star players were in it, somebody would fall on hard times and say, you know, and go public with it. There's and you look traditionally at the divisional round is typically the best weekend in football. I mean, this one was off the charts good, but there are longtime people going, hold on, you're saying this is the best weekend in football ever. Here's a better weekend that they can point to. And I don't have the memory for it, but I know there was a lot of that with just sports writers and things.
How do you leave Cooper Kupp wide fucking open?
When you do an all-out blitz and you foolishly leave him matched up with a safety, I didn't understand that either. That was a really poor decision.
I feel bad for Brady because, I mean, he did what he always does. You know, he comes back and gets him in the game and, 40-something seconds, 42 seconds, I think, left in the clock and just let him drive right down the field. It's just, it sucks. What do you think Tom does? He's got 1 year left in his contract. Do you think he comes back or do you think he's done enough?
He's clearly done enough, but he's done enough for the, 10 years now. But I was listening to Mike Florio talk about it and he's kind of got this theory that, Brady said that he's going to play until he's 45. He's 44 now. But he also points out that Brady's the guy that it doesn't want the big Derek Jeter send-off where they're giving you, fucking furniture, what the hell ever, from town to town. Here's your big ceremony. And he doesn't want that.
Yeah.
So has he been saying 45 knowing that win or lose, it's actually 44 so he can avoid that shit?
True. I mean, he said he doesn't want to suck, and by suck he means not being able to lead his team to victory. So if he feel like he looked tired by the end of this game, like he really did, like it's almost like God, it's a fucking grind to stay in shape. He is, he is getting older. What else does he really need to accomplish? He has every fucking record in the book. He's the first team to ever win a Super Bowl at home. 28-3. Like, what else does he need to do? You know what I mean?
Nothing. I mean, but, hey, if he loves the game that much and he's still, I think he led the league in touchdowns, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's a great way to go out, but there's so many times we could have said that throughout his career. if he still has a desire, I think a lot of it comes down to the team as well.
Yeah.
What kind of team can they put on the field? Are they up against the cap like Green Bay is, for instance? I can't imagine Rodgers goes back to Green Bay, whether it's retirement or he has to be traded. I mean, they're $44 million over the cap, and they have to worry about Devontae Adams.
Right.
Yikes. I think that one's coming to an end. And if it's – I just don't know enough about the Buccaneers and their structure. But you look at the talent they have, and I know some of them will take less to be there.
Right.
But I think they might finally be hitting that wall where it's just, you can't – you can only push things back so far. You're going to start to lose some talent. They had Godwin on the franchise tag this year. So, if it's just a situation, I think he wants to play for a championship. It's not, I expect the team to do, 9 and, like I was going to say 7, but I guess with the new rules, 10 and 7 and get in the playoffs. But I really don't have aspects. I don't really think this is a Super Bowl team. I don't think he sticks around.
I agree. Yeah. And as far as Rodgers, I mean, we know he wanted out, last year, the year before. So I can't imagine he comes back. And you're right, even with that cap. I don't expect it to happen. Where do you think
that guy? I'm a Viking fan, so fuck.
No, I know.
That guy.
No, I know.
I was saying fuck that guy before all the controversy. Fuck him.
Where do you think he would go? I mean, obviously he doesn't want to play for any team that, he wants to win. Given the fact that there's only a certain amount of teams that are elite teams, where do you think you see him going if he does go anywhere?
I look at a team like Denver for sure, even though they're not a playoff team right now. They have a lot of talent, especially offensively, that Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock just don't make good use of. And I was really hopeful that Bridgewater was going to, rediscover some of what he showed here in Minnesota before he got hurt. Not that he was great. He's never going to be a Rodgers Mahomes type, but he was a guy that could dink and dunk and get hot at the right time and win games. And he's just not that guy anymore, unfortunately. So you just look at what they have with Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant at tight end, a couple of really good running backs, a capable defense. And I think that is a potential target for him, especially if they are willing to bring in his quarterback's coach as their head coach. That's one to pay attention to. Who is the next Broncos head coach? Because if it's Nathaniel Hackett, I think they're setting up for that. And they may have already set up to make that attempt to for the trade by getting rid of Von Miller and getting those draft picks from the Rams. I think they're trying to stock up on draft picks to make that play for Rodgers. If it's not there, then I think you just look around. It's not going to be anyone in the NFC North, realistically. Yeah. And so you look around at the rest of the league, and I think the Niners would be interested, but I don't know that Green Bay, even though they're not contenders at all once they get rid of Rodgers, I don't think they're going to want to trade him necessarily within the conference. So if somebody's willing to make you a ridiculous offer, maybe you do it within the conference. But Pittsburgh is a team to keep an eye on for sure with Roethlisberger leaving. I think there is one other team that has kind of come up. I mean, the Colts haven't committed to Carson Wentz, and I don't know what their cap situation is, if they could afford to bring in Rodgers, but that's a team that's you give them one of the elite quarterbacks instead of Wentz, and I think you're talking about a Super Bowl, potential Super Bowl team. I mean, they almost were with Wentz. It looked like at times during the season. So yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't think Tennessee. I can't imagine they would have the cap space to pull it off. But I don't think it's going to be. The Packers may want to send him to Houston, for instance, and just load up on draft picks or something, or get Deshaun Watson in return. But I think if they tried to pull something like that, send him to a non-contender, he just threatens to retire. And I think they know they can't make that happen. So it's possible he stays, that they tweak things so that it's him and Adams. But I also think they've kind of proven now that they don't have enough to get it done. And so all of a sudden you start taking away players rather than adding to fill the holes that you do have. I just don't think Green Bay is a Super Bowl team right now. I went into the playoffs thinking they had a very good chance to be, but they didn't get it done. And so now you're looking at, a bunch of holes that they're going to need to fill. They don't have the cap space. They're going to have to do it through the draft. And I just don't think Rodgers is going to be patient enough to want to do that.
No, I don't think so either. And they don't have a situation where, they had Favre before, and they had Aaron as a backup. Now they're kind of screwed. They never really prepared for their future.
No. I mean, they drafted Jordan Love with that in mind, but he really – I mean, he's had moments in the preseason, but this doesn't seem like it's going to be, the seamless transition that Favre to Rodgers was, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I know Tennessee may want Tannehill out after – his disaster that he had at the end of this game. But, there's a decent offense there for Rodgers. A.J. Brown's a beast. They're one tight end away from being a really, really good offense. We know the defense is there. And I think Vrabel is a great coach, except for the fact that he really fucked up the last 2 minutes of that game playing for a tie. At least that's what it seems like to me. They didn't seem like had any sense of urgency on that last drive. And they were just kind of... trying to run the clock out and get as close as they can.
Does he win Coach of the Year, though?
I think he does.
I think he should.
Yeah, I think he should, too. And he's really the only coach from the Patriots system has ever worked out that well. It seems like wherever they go, they don't do well. Cornell never did well. O'Brien did okay in Texas.
Until he decided that he was a general manager. And Jesus, was he terrible.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Absolutely. But,
none of them. Are you guys going to keep McDaniel? I mean... His name, like the Vikings, need a head coach, and his name is like the reporters will mention it as a long shot. And I don't even think they brought him in. They haven't brought him in yet for an interview.
I think he knows he's heir apparent to the throne. I think it's why he's still hanging around. I don't know how long Bill's going to stay. I don't know what Bill really needs to prove at this point. I just think he wants to get the team in a good position for him to like just leave it over. But I think Josh stays in New England and eventually takes over that team.
Yeah, be careful, Josh. And Paul Levesque thought he was heir apparent, too.
What do you think, NXT 2.0?
To me, it's like watching an indie show.
Wasn't it always, though? Version. Like, it was always kind of like...
Was a super indie before, where you're getting the best of the best from the indie scene, where this... is like going to your local armory and you may see some name talent because they do still have some veterans down there.
Yeah.
But you also may see somebody working their, third, fourth, fifth match of their career that, hey, someday they might be great, but right now they're being carried by that veteran. And so, there's a little bit of that. I'm not big on the weird throwback gimmicks. I'm an old school guy. I don't mind some throwback elements to things, but the occupational characters, the poker player, and I think Duke Hudson is actually a talent. Mm-hmm. Like, just making him a thinking man's wrestler. Don't make him a fucking poker player. Yeah. There's just too many of those weird little quirky things going on in NXT that I just don't care for. But I think at the same time, I give Shawn Michaels and what's left of his crew a ton of credit, because had you told me you're going to be using people in key positions that have had less than 20 matches in their career, mm-hmm. and the product would be as good as it's been, even if you don't like it, you got to admit this is better than I think anyone would have anticipated had they laid out, hey, this is what we're doing. Here's who we're using. Our champion's going to be a guy who's had about 20 matches. You'd have thought they were fucking crazy. And so I know that there are people that just can't stand it. They want the old NXT back. But if you just put the old NXT aside and look at this for what it is, I think you do have to at least respect the way they've pulled it off, even if it's, probably my least favorite of the weekly television shows that I'm covering, and more often than not.
Well, at least they're not, insulting our intelligence by saying, oh, NXT is our third brand. Well, they never, ever treated them as a third brand.
No, that was always a Levesque thing. He would try to get that across in those media calls. We're a third brand. And yeah. It seems like almost everything Levesque brought in, they've tried to get rid of now. They don't have takeovers, which I think is smart. Mm-hmm. Why try to hold yourself up to that standard when you're not capable right now?
Yeah.
But just, some of that lingo, we're a third brand. No, they're not. They're purely developmental. I was surprised they kept New Year's Evil.
Honestly, yeah, me too.
I just assume that's Heavy Metal Paul's creation.
No, that's true. When do you think USA says, all right, this isn't what we signed up for? Or do you think they will?
That's a tricky one, because I don't know how much they wanted this to begin with. Obviously they could have had it at any point. I don't know how much WWE pushed for it over the years, but it didn't end up on their airwaves until AEW rolled around, and WWE obviously wanted to play hardball and try to stunt the growth of AEW. And we know how it played out, but I don't think they paid particularly well for this. And I guess the tricky part now comes with the cancellation of NBC Sports Network. Mm-hmm. They're already, they're advertising on USA that some of those sports that were on there are coming to USA Network. Where do you find room for them? And before, I think it was like, well, it's fairly cheap programming. It's still, it's not winning them any nights or anything, but it's, you look at what they would be putting on in its place, and they're probably doing okay. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, it may just be, we don't have room for this anymore. You may end up on a Sci-Fi or Peacock exclusive. I really wonder if that's where this is headed eventually, not because of their numbers even, but just because they don't, I don't know if the network can ultimately have room for all of this WWE content.
No, I think you're exactly right on that. And I wouldn't mind seeing it go back to Peacock. Like, the original NXT was only on the network or on .com. So I don't think it's a big deal. They're drawing 400,000 to 600,000 people. So you're right. It's probably just a nice little, bump on a Wednesday night or Tuesday night, whatever night, or Tuesday night on. What else is USA going to put out there? Unless they do put out other sports.
Law and Order, fill in the second name. I don't know.
Right.
It seems like that every time I turn on USA Network, Law and Order is on.
That's true. I kind of like 2.0 just to see new, fresh faces, but it does feel like a Vince and Pritchard product, which I'd never been a big fan of. Where do you think the fallout was with Paul? Was it because of the heart condition? Was he just lose faith with Vince? Did Nick Khan kind of just wriggle his way in there and get in Vince's ear? What have you heard, or what do you feel?
I do think that, whether it was Nick Khan really directly going after Levesque or just laying out his plan and having a different vision than Levesque, and Vince liking that vision combined with the loss to AEW. And I don't think it was a fair fight. Yes, NXT was the established brand, but it's not like they, we said they were on WWE Network. It's not like they had this long track record like Raw and SmackDown, yeah, where the people were conditioned to watching that show as part of their weekly routine. So they did get a little bit of a head start, a few weeks, whatever it was. But where I say it's not a fair fight is if you look at AEW, they bring in Shaq, and not that they've used a whole lot of celebrities, but if WWE were to get Shaq, believe me, Shaq ain't going to NXT. So AEW was the top priority for Tony Khan and company, where NXT was, you know, the third brand at best. As yeah, you said, is it really even a third brand? It's developmental. And so it had also coincided with a downtime for them. I just wasn't really impressed by where things were at creatively with NXT at that point. I think they had had much better years. But I do think that losing to AEW is something that Levesque was ultimately punished for.
Do you think Paul was upset over the years with the way, you know, his talent was treated on the main roster?
How could he not be? You know, it's astonishing. I would be insulted if I were him that, look, I know Vince McMahon's a busy man and everything, but you can't find, 45 minutes a week to an hour, depending on the show length, to watch your developmental.
Right.
We'll even, you know, we'll put a video together, Vince. We'll take out all the video packages and the ads for you. You can do this in 30 minutes. He had no fucking clue what some of these people were doing.
Yeah.
You could just see it when he calls them up. I always felt Bailey was one that, Vince, this is right up Vince's alley. He is going to love this. Yep. When Bailey gets to the main roster, back up the Brinks truck, they're going to make some money with this character. He had no fucking clue what made Bailey tick.
And they did, though. Her merch sold very, very well.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the same on the main roster. It needed a reset for the people who weren't familiar with Bailey, and they never did it. And there's just, so many examples of people that really worked at NXT that were ready-made for him, that he could have just plugged right in had he been paying attention and understood what made those characters work. And either he didn't know, which is my guess. Yeah, he'd go to TakeOver once a year, WrestleMania weekend, whoopity-doo. But, stories I've heard is like, if the writers wanted Vince to see someone, they had to put a video together, just kind of showing the basics of this person and make it a brief video, because he just wasn't keeping an eye on what was happening in his own developmental. And I don't expect him to. I don't know. I guess if it were me and knowing what that job entails and as stale as the main roster product became, I would have been glued to that product. I know he's a businessman. He's got other aspects of the business to worry about, but it just seems crazy to me that there've been so many people that have gone up there. Not even the people that you just knew were going to run into trouble. Like, this person is going to work in NXT, but they're too small for Vince. This isn't going to work. Not even those people, but just others that really you're not getting it with this person, Vince. And there were just so many.
Who do you think are the biggest misses that you could think of off the top of your head?
Bailey is certainly one. There's so many people, and I'm terrible at this, but they kind of got it right with Kevin Owens. I don't think they ever got it with Finn Balor the way they could have. And he's one that I worried about because of the size.
Yep.
Whatever it was they tried to fucking do a Karrion Kross was bizarre.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say he's like the biggest miss because there's some holes in his game, but I think he's a really talented dude. Throw some names at me because I'm just drawing a blank here trying to think of who came up and who they missed out on because there's so fucking many.
I mean, Bobby Roode, who's obviously been around forever and was an established star in TNA Impact.
Not surprised.
You know?
I'm really not. The glorious thing carried him in NXT.
It did.
And on the main roster, Bobby Roode is a good hand. You put him in a different company, and yeah, he was a top guy. You put him in WWE, there's just not enough sizzle there for Vince, unfortunately.
Shinsuke Nakamura?
Yeah, some of that's on him, though. The guy peaked with his first match against Sami Zayn in NXT. Let's be real. People on that worked with him were underwhelmed. He just seemed like he got the contract he was looking for and wanted to work that laid-back WWE style more than go out there and be the guy that he was for all those big, memorable matches he had in Japan.
Neville?
Not surprised.
Really? Even with his abilities?
So I think, yeah, but I mean, it's the height thing, and it shouldn't matter. I mean, the guy's jacked to the gills. You'd think Vince would love him. And I guess we'll never know what Mighty Mouse character, what that may have been, but, because he did have that in mind for him at one point. But no, he was a guy that I hoped Vince would like, but it was the height thing. Like, Vince needs to get over it, and he probably won't.
Do you throw Ricochet in that same category?
A little, but he also can't cut promos.
No, God, no. Jesus Christ, no. I mean, he's from Paducah, so I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah, you got to work around some of that. You know, you can see why it doesn't work, but I also feel like I'm making excuses for Vince, and I'm not trying to as much as just the reality is that's what Vince is looking at. I would, you know, a talent like Ricochet, okay, you don't think he's a good promo, and he's not, put him in a fucking mask then. Do something with him. Something to, you know, the old Paul Heyman approach.
Yep.
Accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. And they're just, when you get to that main roster, it's like they look for the negatives, any reason not to push you, and that is just so counterproductive.
Look at Cesaro then. I mean, Cesaro's a guy that people have been pushing, you know, the fans have been wanting to push for years. Is that another thing where he's just foreign and Vince doesn't get it?
Too Swiss, brother.
Yeah. That's unfortunate because, I mean, the guy's a fucking, he's a beast, dude. Like, strongest guy I've seen other than John Cena.
Yeah. I'm not surprised he's not, like, face of the company, but I am disappointed that he's not. He's never been a real player for a sustained time. He's, you know, okay, he cuts kind of weird promos. I've been down on those. Give him a manager and have somebody do the talking for him.
Well, he was.
It's okay.
He was a Paul Heyman guy for like a week, right?
Yeah, and even Heyman has said that they didn't have any aspirations there. That was just so he could go out and talk about the streak.
That's crazy.
Being broken.
Yeah. I mean, that's really crazy. I mean, there's so many others, but just another recent one. Do you think they're right about Keith Lee? They just didn't see anything in him.
Yeah, just, you know, some of the things that have come out, even like people who were really high on Keith Lee in NXT and wanted things to work out there, just felt he was a guy that was his own worst enemy. He just didn't, he can be stubborn, and I don't know, he had the rep for, whether it's fair or not, he had the rep for being a boo-boo face guy. If he's going to lose, he didn't like to lose and would let everybody know it. And that's not going to fly. And so I think the guy is tremendously talented. I was really hoping that, because the early buzz was that Vince was super excited about him. And not when he actually called him up, but I don't know if he was in the Rumble or Survivor Series. I don't remember what the circumstances were, but that was the guy that Vince was excited to buy. And so I remember people out like, who do you think is going to do better, Keith Lee or Riddle? And so, well, I think Keith Lee, because Vince was so excited about him.
Yeah.
And Riddle had all the baggage. And nope, it's been the exact opposite, obviously.
Well, now, what do you think of guys like Rick Boogs, who, you know, hardly made a splash in NXT and gets brought up, and he's, you know, the second coming of Elias, but he's over.
Well, Elias is another one, too. You know, there are guys like that. Now, I hate Happy Corbin. I hated King Corbin. Yeah. I think Baron Corbin is a hell of a talent.
Absolutely.
But there are people like Braun Strowman. Yeah. There are certain people that, for whatever reason, Paul Levesque's crew didn't see much in, or a guy like Strowman, I wonder how much of it was, yeah, we don't want to show him to the world until it's time. So we could get something out of him here, but if we are truly developmental, let's get him ready, but let's let him really, you know, make his debut on the main roster kind of a thing. But yeah, there are definitely people that the NXT faithful were really down on. Corbin used to, you know, be Andy Elias. I think the fans were pretty tough on those guys, and they've gone to the main roster, and Vince sees something in them and makes it work with them. So, I mean, there are definitely examples of people you wouldn't expect that Vince ended up gravitating toward for whatever reason.
Do you think Baron's just happy to be here, kind of like Finn and the rest of them? Like, I mean, Baron should be one to be like, look, this isn't fucking working. I'm a former NFL player. I'm a fucking legit athlete. I'm a badass. He's the most improved player, you know, in the last couple of years. Really got into, you know, cutting great promos. He's a guy that I could just give the ball to and just run with it. He's got all the tools.
I wonder if he's what the personality is there. I just don't know enough about him. Is he a guy that thinks this king shit and the happy shit is great? And you know, he like, if you tried to take it away from him, he would argue, and he likes that more sports entertainment type of stuff. Or is he, you know, frustrated going, man, can I just be Baron Corbin, please?
Yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, the whole time they were doing the King thing, we're like, please let this be a short term thing and let him go to Baron Corbin. You know, you're doing the cliche royalty thing with the guy who doesn't need that gimmick. And that damn thing lasted for over a year.
Yeah.
This happy thing won't go away.
Yeah.
They, I mean, you can just tell, like, Vince is loving this. They're, now they're coming up with new and exciting ways to make Riddick Moss look more ridiculous each week. And so that's a sign that it's not punishment. Vince thinks it's great.
I mean, it's got him written all over it. You could just tell that's his style of humor. Yeah, I'd like to see Corbin just go back to being the lone wolf and just, you know, beating the fuck out of people. I mean, he goes from main eventing, you know, against Seth Rollins for the world title, and then he's getting fucking dog food shoved in his face by Roman Reigns. It just doesn't make any sense. Switching over to AEW for a second, what do you think has been the big miss there with them not being able to capitalize on, you know, getting over a million viewers every week and seem to be just all over the map? Is it Tony Khan? Is it just, you know, the way he books? What's the disconnect there?
I think it is some of the booking. You know, so the booking is the reason that they are in a decent place, but it's also limiting, in my opinion. I think they focus on some acts that, you know, we have that deep of a roster. I just wouldn't be putting on television as much as they do. I think that it's, I don't, like, name me an AEW cliffhanger. You know, it's the style of booking too. There's like I think it's a well-booked show by and large, but I do feel like there's holes in the game and there's areas that that are in dire need of improvement, and it's just kind of inconsistent. You know, I think there's a lot of, hey, look at our big matches, and there's not great storytelling across the board. There's some really good storytelling. There's always the, oh yeah, but they're long-term booking. Well, I mean, we've been hearing that from the beginning. Shouldn't we be getting results now?
Yeah. I mean, they're 3 years in. Should they be producing this much TV with Dynamite and Rampage and Dark and Elevation?
No. I mean, hey, you take what you can get with Dynamite and Rampage as far as the television deals are concerned. I understand that. I've never understood the need for these ridiculously long Dark and Dark Elevations. I don't know why you need two of those shows. Yeah. It's our developmental. Well, you can have legitimate dark matches. It's okay. I don't like, I went to, my first AEW shows were Full Gear Weekend. Mm-hmm. They had Rampage on Friday night, and then they had the pay-per-view the next night. And, you know, it was fun to be there for the Rampage show. But the first 2 hours of it, essentially, you know, give or take, were just dark or dark elevation matches. And the crowd was really into it for the first half, I would say. And then you could just see they hit a wall. Yeah. They started getting bored watching very predictable matches. And I don't know why they feel the need to do this. I don't know why he feels like we need to have these dark and dark elevation. They can't be bringing them a ton of money. And as far as this being developmental, who's getting developed in these 2-3 minute matches?
Right.
I mean, it's something, but it's not what it should be.
I mean, if you want to get ring time in, that's why you should have your own place like the Power Plant did with WCW, or, you know, maybe not have a full on performance center, but at least have a school or somewhere. You know, like, I thought Dustin had a school. Shouldn't they be getting their ring time in there?
Dustin has a school. QT and Cody have that school.
Yeah.
And I think they do get some. And I think as the world gets back to normal, I think you'll start seeing some of their undercard talent working for other promotions independently or whatnot and whatnot. But it, for now, I also think some of it is he's trying too hard to be the nicest guy in wrestling. Mm-hmm. With, you know, there's just people that they signed that made sense at the time in some cases, that as they grew and WWE started cutting so many people, there's just not room for. And it's very admirable that he is taking the approach that our contracts mean something. You know, they could do the WWE 90 day if they wanted to, but he's really trying to establish that, yeah, there's no guarantee with them, that there's always you're always at risk of being fired. With us, if it's a 2-year contract, you're going to be under contract for 2 years. I get that. But it doesn't mean you need to use those people. You can just say, all right, we got to make some tough decisions. We did not expect to be able to sign all these people. And so we just don't have as much going on. Or, you know, we don't have enough room for everybody. We're going to keep paying you. But rather than pay you to work 2-minute dark and dark elevation matches, We're just going to keep you at home. And if you can find indies on top of this, you're free to do so.
I mean, given the way he handled Big Swell and Leo Rush and all that publicly, do you think Tony needs to just delete his Twitter?
Big Swell and who was the other one?
Leo Rush.
Yeah. I don't know why he felt the need to. The Leo Rush thing, just...
I mean, that's typical. That's typical Leo, right? I mean...
It is, but for me, it's like, it's okay to have that conversation with him after you have the conversation with Big Swole.
Right.
I don't know why he lashed out. I think I do. I think he read the headlines or a brief recap, had no idea what the tone of that actual podcast was. It's New Year's Eve. You know, who knows what he was doing for New Year's Eve? I know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. I would not have been tweeting that night. And, you know, he just lashed out. And rather than just say, oops, made a mistake, very sorry, call Swole, have the conversation, didn't realize the tone. Because if you listen to her actual podcast, this was not a hatchet job. This was not her burying AEW by any means. It was her telling her side of things in a very calm, matter-of-fact manner, and talking about how much she enjoyed certain aspects of the company and how she really liked Tony, how generous he is. And then she had some criticisms, and that's all he saw was the criticisms, and it is my guess. And just because he read headlines or read a quick transcript and lashed out about it. And it was a bad look. Yeah. When it comes to that, he doesn't have to delete Twitter, but you don't need to respond to everything. It's okay. And I don't know if this actually happens. I have my suspicions. You don't need to rally the troops, because it does seem like if there's something negative written about somebody in AEW, here they all come to defend that person.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of their talent on Twitter, too, lashing out at fans. I mean, even Brandy does it. There's no need for them to do that. I mean, be a little bit more professional when you're talking to people that buy your tickets.
Well, it's funny. You ask me how I stay under the radar. I don't respond to shit like that.
Right.
I'll get people that'll try to get under my skin or whatever. And sometimes it's tempting. I can't tell you how many times I've started a tweet and like, no, not worth it. Because it's just not. Yeah. You know, and... They're in some cases, some of them are new to the success and they're new to this, but I think Tony has shown that he has thin skin and needs to learn how to improve. You know, we all have areas of weakness, and I think that's one with him. And, you know, another part of their problem too, I think they book to the audience they already have.
Yeah.
They're thinking of like great match, great match, great match. You have that audience that loves your great matches. What about the other people, the more casual fan that you're not bringing in? What are you doing to reach them? Is it, you know, well, let's give them more of the best friends. No, I'm sorry. That's not the answer. Orange Cassidy's over. Are the rest of them?
Well, I said as many times on this show that, you know, Cody from the very beginning said he didn't want to cater to the casual fan. He wanted to cater to his core audience that, you know, the core audience that got in there, which is horribly short-sighted if you're running a business.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is. Absolutely. That's a mistake. And I think we're seeing why they there's growth there. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
There's some, and I people want to downplay this. Look, when your show goes from being in prime time on the West Coast to suddenly airing at 5 PM, that's going to affect your numbers. It really is. And is it everything? No, but I've just seen people try to act like it's, you know, completely nothing, a non-factor. And it wasn't. And, you know, so now that they're on TBS, that's no longer an issue. It was kind of a short-term thing where once the NHL moved to TNT, they started doing that. They didn't have that the West Coast delay. So I think that did hurt them a little bit. And I think that's why the numbers have gone up a little bit, too. But now, you know, that's no longer an issue. And so let's see if they can grow. And hopefully they will. But I do see, you know, they don't like criticism. And no one should be above criticism. I'm not, you're not, you know, why do they, instead of, look, if there's haters out there for everything, ignore them. But if somebody has valid criticism, my God, listen, it's not that complicated.
I mean, Jim Ross got frustrated because a lot of talent wouldn't listen to him. And I mean, you want to learn from a guy who's been there and done that and has seen it all and learn from Bill Watts and Vince McMahon and all these, you know, great people in wrestling. I think Tim just figures, fuck it, I'm just gonna let my contract run out and I'll make the most out of it when I can, but I don't foresee him staying there past whatever his contract length is.
I mean, he's indicated that he might do another year. You know, I think he's 70 now, and I haven't heard anything recent, but the last time I remember hearing about that was JR kind of indicating that the ball's in his court. He may do another year. So we'll see. But yeah, that's one of the first mistakes I think they made. I had JR on one of my podcasts and early on in AEW and asked him about it. I was shocked that they never approached him when it came to anything involving talent relations decisions.
Wow.
You didn't have to put him in that chair.
Yeah.
But my God, the guy assembled the greatest roster that could be assembled at a time when there was massive competition in the industry.
Yep.
And knows how, you know, what the market is for talent. And I think they paid a price. Now, you know, cons have deep pockets, but how do you not consult JR so you're not bidding against yourself, essentially? You're just overpaying people.
No, I agree. I mean, you look at it, just the talent that they have there for producers. I mean, you got Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson. You got Jake Roberts on your roster. You know, you have all these people. Like, how do you not just, even if you, I wouldn't say put them in a booking committee, but at least have them, you know, have some input or insight on what's going on. And nobody seems to want to stand up against Tony Khan and say, I don't think we should be doing business this way.
No, and I think Tony, I'm hoping it's just something that's going to develop in time. That I think he wants to be everybody's friend. We see it in the end within the way he deals with other promotions. There's, you know, is it admirable to a point? If I'm in Tony Khan's position, I'm taking more of a Vince McMahon approach, and wrestling fans don't want to hear that, but I'm not working with promotions that, let's be real, are, you know, beneath them. I'm not actively trying to put them out of business, but I'm not propping them up either, because there's, as we've talked about, there's so much freaking television content right now. Why are you trying to make it, you know, when they sent Kenny Omega to Impact Wrestling, like everybody, you know, yay, way to go, Tony, that's really nice. That's all you get out of that. You're propping up your competition to be the nice guy. And I think that carries over to the way he runs that company. I think there's the thin-skinned aspect to him that we see on social media from time to time, but he wants to be everybody's friend. And I think in time he's going to figure out that, yeah, you're going to have some friends along the way, but you can't please everybody all the time. You know, you can't just turn this in. It may be admirable that you want this to be a great laid back fun atmosphere, but you also have talent. I don't know if this is still happening, but for the longest time, he had the optional workouts, you know, pre-show workouts that people were skipping.
Yeah.
And there was no punishment for it. Like, you know, I mean, if you, especially at a time when you're not doing house shows, the indies weren't running full strength, what better do you have to do? Get your ass in that ring and learn from people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Do you think if business keeps going the way it does in AEW that, you know, Tony can end up being the biggest detriment to the company? And would you ever see them folding within maybe the next 5 years or so?
I think the only way that happens is if the television industry really takes a turn. Mm-hmm. And I can't even imagine, because it's just, you're seeing so much streaming. Could they be in a position where, look, they do great numbers for their slots, both nights, really. To be in the top 10 cable, that's really impressive. And you would think that TBS and TNT would be thrilled to renew. And AEW is obviously going to want the biggest number they can. But we've also seen WarnerMedia, TBS, TNT have brought in the NHL. They have the NBA. They've got a lot of other things going. And I don't think it's like AEW is at risk of just being the odd company out there. But, you know, regime changes happen. They've already had one regime change. The guy who brought them into the fold is no longer with the company. Yep. And it seems like they're on good, solid footing, but you just never know. And if TNT, TBS, for whatever reason, weren't willing to give you the type of money that you're asking for, who's going to give it to you? And maybe there is somebody. But if there's not, then what? But I don't think, like, Tony's going to book this. He may, what we're seeing may stunt the growth to some extent, but I don't see it being so damaging that they're at risk of going out of business because of the booking either.
Well, with the main stars that they've brought in, I mean, you'd think that a guy like CM Punk would be a needle mover. That seems to be the buzzword going around. Like, you know, Roman is the needle mover, but Punk isn't. Daniel Bryan isn't. Adam Cole isn't. Andrade. All these guys that they've brought in, which are main stars from the WWE, why haven't we seen there be a big spike in ratings?
I think some of it's the booking. I think some of it, Punk especially, who's Punk been in the ring with that you really wanted to see him in the ring with?
Guys that he wants to wrestle, not who anybody wants to see him wrestle. It's almost like he's got, you know, his pick of the litter, and he just wants to have good matches with guys, you know, like younger guys, but yet he's not putting anybody over. It's almost like he has a no-lose, you know, clause in his contract.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want him to lose to any other people that he's been in the ring with. I mean, you can make maybe Darby Allin, but that was match one. Right. Realistically, you're not going to have Punk lose in Chicago in match one. But everybody else, I mean, we're starting to get to him and MJF. We'll get there probably when they go to Chicago. That's one. But, I mean, Eddie Kingston, I saw that match in Full Gear, and that was fun. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the TV matches build up to something that people actually want to see, not just, hey, you get to see CM Punk wrestle again. You know, it means something, but it's not what it should be. You know, it's not, man, I want to see Punk kick this guy's ass. We haven't had that yet. And so that's been a mistake. And where's the big advertising blitz for CM Punk and for Bryan Danielson and all these people they brought in? Some of that, you know, do you blame AEW? Do you blame the network? I'm just honestly not sure, but we haven't seen it. And spread the word. We've seen them do some advertising during Raw, for instance, for Dynamite and Rampage, but that's something like when you commit to names like that, I want a big advertising campaign to let the world know, hey, we have CM Punk back. Tune in to see this guy. And that ship sailed.
Especially when he was the guy that, you know, said he would never come back to wrestling and talk shit about it for so many years. Comes back all happy, selling ice cream bars. And, you know, look, I don't know if you know him personally, but just based on what I've seen over the years, he's just not a people person. He doesn't give a shit about the fans, in my opinion. I think he's just there for the money. I think
yes and no. I do know Phil a little bit. Going back to, he used to, early in his career, he used to work for Steel Domain Wrestling in the Twin Cities. And so, yeah, I got to know him back in those days when he was coming up here with Colt and Ace Steel and Danny Dominion. And, I think there is, I think he's genuine. When it comes to, he does care about the fans, but I also, it's Punk, you know, he's got a bit of a prickly personality at times. And so you catch him on the right day, he's going to be great to the fans. And I don't know that there's too many examples of him being truly bad to the fans or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, I think it kind of just depends on his mood probably during, you know, whatever mood he's in that day, but a lot. Yeah. I mean, he didn't come back for peanuts either. He's not back for, you know, out of the kindness of his heart. He's here to make money.
We've seen how well the Brock Lesnar treatment has been over the last, God, I think it's almost been 10 years, just treating him as an attraction. Mm-hmm. Why don't they do that with Punk?
Yeah, if you're going to use him, there's ways you do it where, all right, if we've got him for X number of dates, let's make him an attraction.
Yeah.
And if he's more of a full-time player, which it seems like he is, then you take the approach we just talked about. You don't want to give everything away on television. That would be foolish, but you can give some things away on television, more than they have. You know, the Wardlow match is a match I wanted to see.
Yep.
So, again, there have been some, but there's just too many. And where's the big hot angle been? The Eddie Kingston thing came together very quickly.
Yep.
Heading into that pay-per-view, and it was really, really well done, but it came together quickly. And then the MJF thing is a really slow build, and that's okay. But before that, we're just kind of, they try to get by on the thrill of seeing Punk work with anybody, and that'll work briefly, but it's got to be building up to something, and it just didn't feel like it was.
I just don't think we need to be oversaturated with him, like having him on commentary on both shows every week, you know what I mean, or making an appearance here and there. You don't need to put him out there that much. I mean, he's a big enough deal with the hardcore wrestling fans that know who he is. But if you're a casual and you're turning in, like, oh, I kind of remember that guy in WWE, and he's just sitting there doing commentary, it just doesn't say a lot for, hey, this guy is the best in the world. You know, why is he fighting Powerhouse Hobbs or Ricky Starks or any of these guys?
Yeah, well said. I think it does. There's going to be people that defend it because they like to hear Punk on commentary, but I think it does bring him down a little bit. I think there is something to be said for it could have been better just to use him as that special attraction, save his matches by and large for pay-per-view.
Switching to the Rumble as we wrap it up here, it's coming up this Saturday. You mentioned, you know, working with Impact, the supposed forbidden door is open now with WWE and Impact bringing Mickie James in. Do you think it's just a one-off with her? Do you expect any other names to be in there? I think fans are going a little bit overboard with their predictions.
they always do.
Yeah. What do you see happening this Saturday with maybe some some surprise entrance?
From Impact, I would say if there's going to be anyone else, and I don't know that there will be, it would probably be somebody, a W. Morrissey, who's had history with them, big guy. But I don't know that they will, and beyond that, I'm just trying to think of who's an Impact that would make sense. Like, I don't think they're going to bring in Impact World Champion Moose.
Yeah.
Like, if it were Deonna Purrazzo still the champion, I don't think this was a deal based on who your champion is. It was because Mickie James has familiarity with that company. The audience knows her. And I think part of it, too, is they want to end things on a better note than they did with the whole trash bag incident. And so, yeah, I'm not saying there won't be anyone, but if I had to bet on it, I would say, yeah, there's not going to be. It's Mickie and that's it. But as far as the other surprises, I'd love to see something huge. I'd love to see The Rock. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Probably the usual suspects in terms of, maybe you get Goldberg. Maybe you get the more mid-card, undercard kind of name from the past. So nobody takes seriously, but it's fun to see them. Like, nobody thinks they're going to win, but, oh, cool, it's so-and-so.
Like RVD, maybe, or somebody like that again?
Sure. Yeah, that type, where you really don't think they're going to, once you see them, like, oh, man, they might win this thing. It's more of, cool, I get to see this guy make his entrance, and maybe he has a quick little moment in the Rumble.
Do we see Bron Breakker make an appearance?
I think so. Yeah, I think we do. They got to be careful with it. If you're not going to have the guy win the thing, and I don't think they will. Let me put it this way. I think that because people have asked about that, and my thing is, if you thought realistically in the past with NXT talent coming up, if you looked at it and thought there's a 2% chance that fill in the wrestler could come from NXT out of the blue and win the Rumble, maybe you bump it up to a 5% chance now because they're on, they've been on USA for a while, but that counts for something. But they're also on Vince's radar more than they were before. So Vince may be a little more actively involved in keeping an eye on Bron Breakker than he was filling your wrestler from the Paul Levesque era. But I don't think if he does enter the Rumble, I don't think he wins it. I think the key is give him some eliminations. Maybe you come up with a way that we're, somebody cheats to eliminate him. Mm-hmm. You just protect him.
I would give him the Kane treatment and just have him, go through a bunch of fucking guys. And then, maybe have somebody gang up on him or, I don't know, maybe somebody from NXT just take him out. It's every man for himself. Sure. Do you think they reward Kevin Owens for re-signing?
And how so? Giving him...
By possibly winning the Rumble?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't.
What about, say Brock's match goes before the Rumble and he ends up losing to Lashley. Do you see him entering the Rumble and possibly winning it?
Yes. Yeah. That would be my strongest prediction right now. Paul Heyman turns on Lesnar because I think they've dropped some clues along the way. One of them being Brock Lesnar. Well, first they had that segment with Roman where he defended Paul when Brock started to yell at him.
Yeah.
And then you also had Brock deliver that line on Raw that he can't believe they're together again. That was a way of saying this hasn't been the plan all along. Like, it hasn't been Lesnar and Heyman conspiring against Reigns. Brock can't believe that here we are again. That's how I took it. And so that may have been their way of just kind of setting the table that, it wasn't the plan. And it leaves the door open that Paul and Roman have actually been conspiring against Brock this entire time. So I do think that there's a really good chance that, especially, throw in Lashley making his spoiler prediction, that it comes true because somebody screws Brock Lesnar, whether it's Heyman or Roman himself, the Usos. Lashley wins that championship. Brock probably enters the Rumble and wins, but also it could be, I guess it depends where that match takes place. I would think it will take place before the men's Rumble. And if it does, I think you better do a hell of a beatdown if you're not going to have Brock in that match. You better, give him a storyline reason why he's not seeking his revenge that night. And if he doesn't, well, Lord knows Brock likes going to Saudi Arabia, and you can always have him win the chamber.
I was going to ask you, do you see anything major happening at the Chamber match or the pay-per-view?
Yeah, I think it'll be the usual as far as they're going to, have the other challengers established, whoever the non-Rumble winners are. I think it's just that simple. Beyond that, I think it's going to be more of a regular elimination chamber type of show. Maybe they bring in a legend or something like that. Maybe that's Goldberg's final match.
I did hear that, you know, Goldberg may be involved in the Rumble at some point, or at least he has interest in it. I don't know if that's going to happen, but they also made a point to leak out that Mark Calloway is going to be there for the Rumble. Do you see him having any kind of in-ring appearance?
That's one of those extreme long shots that I think if you're in Vegas, you don't bet a lot on it, but you take those odds.
Yeah.
Look, his send-off sucked. We all know it. Mm-hmm. This one's in Texas, WrestleMania. Surprise he wins. Surprise he, you know, he's in a title match. I mean, I don't think he needs to be in a title match, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think he has to be in the Rumble and win it. If I'm going to do one more Taker match, I just think Taker's final match sells it. You don't need to have him going for the title, but Vince likes to do things as grand as possible, so I can't rule out that they would. But yeah, I mean, maybe he's there to set up something for Mania. Or God help us, he's going to, you know, set up something for Saudi Arabia, and that'll be his last match.
Yeah. Do you see any surprise returns, say like Bray Wyatt, or even possibly Braun Strowman, who doesn't have a major contract?
So I'm probably reading too much into this, but when I saw, once I got over the they're not calling him Steiner, I looked at Braun Breaker, and I'm like, wow, that's really fucking close to Braun. yeah. They must not intend to bring him back. And I mean, hey, there's nothing stopping them. We know they've reached out to some of the women that they, you know, the Iconics have put it out there basically that they were offered a spot and decided not to. And I think some of that is just due to they don't have the numbers with the women. I mean, you just look at who they have announced and there's so many legends in there already. The men. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's nothing. I don't know that it's going to be anybody that, my God, the Fiend won or anything like that.
Right.
But could they reach out to some, you know, some of the people they've cut to play a role in the match? Sure. I don't know that you're going to see them reach out to Bray Wyatt and officially re-sign him or anything like that. That's why I'm just kind of keeping my expectations kind of in check for people like that. There's a reason they let them go, whatever it is. And, you know, it's not that they never bring people back, but do I think they're going to when they're still cutting people in NXT? Probably not.
Bray's YouTube page has been pretty active lately, and he's, you know, put out videos that it looks like he's returning somewhere, and he's been using WWE clips. I mean, it could be fair use. You know, it is what it is. Maybe that door is open, and we might see him before WrestleMania.
Yeah, could be. It'd be an interesting rehire. I'm over the Fiend. I want to see.
Oh, yeah.
That, the thing, I look forward to seeing Wyndham outside. I don't want, you know, when there was rumors he was going to Impact, I'm like, oh my God, that just, I probably sound like I'm picking on Impact today. I'm really not trying to, but that does feel like beneath him.
Yeah.
You'd want to see him in an AEW if he's going to go somewhere else. And I just want to see the original cult leader, Bray Wyatt, or something along those lines, rather than any supernatural bullshit.
What do you think about John Cena? Always seems to kind of pop his head in around this time of year. Do you see any involvement in WrestleMania for him?
I mean, he's kind of put it out there that he doesn't know if he can. And I remember he did that one year and it was like, yeah, he's probably full of it. Yeah. And it turned out he was, you know, being honest about it, I believe, if memory serves. So I think he's a guy that if his schedule allows it, yeah, I think there is a chance he does something at Mania. But I think Hollywood is his first priority now, and it should be.
On the women's side, obviously the big word going around now is Ronda Rousey may be back for the Rumble. Do you think she shows up and wins?
If she's in it, I think she wins it, or she eliminates Becky or whatever they want her to do at WrestleMania. But I would think there's a really good chance that she wins it. Rather than she doesn't, she comes back, she doesn't win it, and then she wins a chamber match to get it. I think if Rousey comes back, she wins.
I agree. I think you almost have to, right? At that point, I mean, she's kind of earned that spot with how well she did in her first run. To me,
got the dynamic fucked up.
Yeah.
And you look, Becky's the heel, and so they're going to try to turn Ronda into the babyface again. I mean, haven't we seen how this works?
Yeah. I mean, Ronda was a little bit of thin skin when it came to fans' reactions towards her. So, I mean.
Yeah, I'll say.
She has to learn to kind of get over that. But I mean,
Tony Khan should go to therapy together.
That's true. But I thought Ronda had a really good run, you know, technical wise. I thought she adapted very well.
Definitely. Yeah, I was very impressed by what she did. It was just, yeah, some of the oddball tweets. And I mean, that's just Ronda Rousey. Some of that, you know, if you followed her MMA career, that she would have those moments where it's like, wow, she really said that. Okay.
Would you want to see her and Becky again and just kind of get her win back?
I would, yeah, if the dynamic is there. I mean, I wasn't a fan of them turning Becky heel. I'm still not. She plays the part well. It's not that. It's just there's more money in Becky as a babyface. And if this will, like, I'd love to be surprised in that Ronda comes back as the heel, and that's what they do to get out of this. They use her to turn Becky, but we're not seeing any hints of that. I mean, other than, I guess, Becky's working with a heel at the Rumble, which is bizarre. We want her to be booed so badly that we're going to, and she's getting cheered, but we're going to put her in there with a heel that we know is going to get booed. I don't get it, but I don't think it's part of any master plan on their part. I just think it's probably a case of she wanted to work with Doudrop, and
yeah,
they didn't have anything else going on, and they said, sure, and they just refused to change that stupid, awful, terrible Doudrop name.
It's bizarre, but again, it's Vince McMahon, so obviously nothing has changed. Well, Jason, I appreciate your time, brother. It's always good to talk to you. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, what you got going on with prowrestling.net, and whatever else you need to plug.
Sure, you can try to harass me on Twitter. You can try to insult me and see if I'll lash out at you. Maybe I'll snap out of it. It's at prowrestlingnet is the place to follow me on Twitter. And if I don't respond to you, then I'm doing a great job of biting my tongue. But no, if you're being nice and you want to chat, I'm always happy to do that. But also, the website is prowrestling.net. And just all the news updates and major television shows reviewed in both written and audio form for our members, on the which I'll get into in a second. Live coverage of the Royal Rumble and all the major pay-per-view events. Johnny Fairplay and I will get together on Monday for the Pro Wrestling Boom Live podcast. That's it. 1 Central, 2 Eastern, a workday thing on Monday. We're live the Mondays after WWE's pay-per-view events. And so if you'd like to call into that show, we'd love to have you. I'll have all the details for that available at prowrestling.net. But you can do a search for Pro Wrestling Boom. That is my free weekly podcast, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And sometimes, like I say, we're live sometimes. Once in a while, I'll have somebody on from the wrestling media. Sometimes it's an interview with somebody from the business. You never know what the hell you're going to get from the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. And on the membership side of things, it is the ad-free version of everything we do at prowrestling.net, a special ad-free website, special ad-free audio content, all of those major television shows, all of those pay-per-views reviewed in audio form, plus the .net weekly audio show. Jake Barnett and I get together on Fridays to talk about all the news of the week. And then on Mondays, when I'm not doing the Boom Live show, my Q&A show, which is usually probably the most laid back I get to be. I come on here and I get to drop F-bombs, and I'll do it occasionally, like if Raw really sucks or something. But Q&A, all bets are off. It's pro wrestling questions to start. And then on the back end of things, the members will ask me about all sorts of stupid shit. Could be TV, could be movies, could be football, could be what if I like a certain food. You never know what the hell they're going to ask, and you never know how the hell I'm going to answer. But that is probably the most fun I have consistently throughout the week, in addition to talking with Jake on .NET Weekly, is the Q&A audio show. If you're interested in membership, great time to sign up. I know everybody has a sale, right? This is, I think, the first one I've done since last spring. So jump on it while you can. And the sale is that if you sign up now, for 3 months, I'll knock $10 off the subscription. And so it basically brings it to $3 and some change per month. And all you have to do is visit the main page at prowrestling.net to find out all the details on that one. But you can go directly to pwmembership.net. And once you were there, use that 3 month option, and then enter the coupon code SALE22, all one word, SALE22. And once you do, again, that'll knock $10 off the subscription price for you. And you can use that same code on everything but our monthly, because if you did it for the monthly, I'd actually owe you money. So that wouldn't be good. But if you want to sign up for a longer thing, you'll knock $10 off that price too. Again, that's pwmembership.net.
Well, there you go, guys. Definitely worth the money. So check that out, prowrestling.net. That's a great sale. Like he said, he doesn't run them that often. I didn't realize Powell was Jewish. So take advantage of the sale while it's out there. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at RadRobGaming. You can follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, or sign up to my YouTube channel. Subscribe there at Rad Rob Gaming. I'll be back later on this afternoon for the Royal Rumble pregame show and then the Royal Rumble postgame wrap-up show right here in the Rad Rob Radio Network. Jason, thank you for being here, brother. Appreciate it as always.
Thank you, man. Talk to you soon.
And we'll see you guys later on this afternoon, guys. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of RTW Rewind. For all the latest news and announcements, please follow us on Twitter at RTW Brand. You can also follow Rad Rob at Rad Rob Gaming. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on the Rad Rob Radio Network.